room, Hilly heads for the corner. "Why, Johnny Foot," Hilly says, "I'm surprised to see you here. Everybody knows you can't stand big parties like this." She squeezes the crook of his arm. Johnny sighs. "Are you aware that doe season opens tomorrow?" Hilly gives him an auburn lipsticked smile. The color matches her dress so perfectly it must have been searched out for days. "I am so tired of hearing that from everybody. You can miss one day of the hunting season, Johnny Foot. You used to, for me." Johnny rolls his eyes. Celia wouldn't have missed this for anything. "Where is that wife of yours?" she asks. Hilly still got her hand tucked in the crook of Johnny's arm, and she gives it another pull. "Not at the LSU game serving hot dogs, is she?" Johnny frowns down at her, even though it's true, that's how they met. "Oh, now, you know I'm just teasing you. We dated long enough to where I can do that, can't I?" Before Johnny can answer, Hilly's shoulder is tapped and she glides over to the next couple, laughing. Johnny sighs when he sees Celia headed toward him. "Good," he says to Richard. "Now we can go home. I'm getting up in," he looks at his watch, "5 hours. Richard keeps his eyes locked on Celia as she strides toward them. She stops and bends down to retrieve her dropped napkin, offering a generous view of her bosoms. "Going from Hilly to Celia must have been quite the change, Johnny." Johnny shakes his head. "Like living in Antarctica all my life and one day moving to Hawaii." Richard laughs. "Like going to bed in seminary and waking up at Old Miss," Richard says, and they both laugh. Then Richard adds in a lower voice, "Like a kid eating ice cream for the very first time." Johnny gives him a look. "That's my wife you're talking about." "Sorry, Johnny," Richard says, lowering his eyes. "No harm meant." Celia walks up, sighs with a disappointed smile. "Hey, Celia, how are you?" Richard says. "You sure are looking nice tonight."
"Thanks, Richard."
Celia lets out a loud hiccup, and she frowns, covering her mouth with a tissue. "You getting tipsy?" asks Johnny. "She's just having fun, aren't you, Celia?" Richard says. "In fact, I'm fixin' to get you a drink you're gonna love. It's called an Alabama Slammer." Johnny rolls his eyes at his friend. "And then we're going home." 3 Alabama Slammers later, the winners of the silent auction are announced. Susie Purnell stands behind the podium while people mill about drinking or smoking at the tables, dancing to Glenn Miller and Frankie Valli songs, talking over the din of the microphone. As names are read, items are received with the excitement of someone winning a real contest, as if the booty were free and not paid for at 3, 4, or 5 times the store value. Tablecloths and nightgowns with the lace tatted by hand bring in high bids. Odd sterling servers are popular for spooning out deviled eggs, removing pimentos from olives, cracking quail legs. Then there are the desserts. Cakes, slabs of pralines, divinity fudge, and, of course, Minnie's pie. And the winner of Minnie Jackson's world-famous chocolate custard pie is Hilly Holbrook. There is a little more applause for this one. Not just because Minnie's known for her treats, but because the name Hilly elicits applause on any occasion. Hilly turns from her conversation. "What? Was that my name? I didn't bid on anything." "She never does," Skeeter thinks, sitting alone a table away. "Hilly, you just won Minnie Jackson's pie. Congratulations," says the woman to her left. Hilly scans the room, eyes narrowed. Minnie, having heard her name called in the same sentence as Hilly's, is suddenly very alert. She is holding a dirty coffee cup in one hand, a heavy silver tray in the other, but she stands stock still. Hilly spots her, but doesn't move either, just smiles very slightly. Well, wasn't that sweet? Someone must have signed me up for that pie. She doesn't take her eyes off Minnie, and Minnie can feel it. She stacks the rest of the cups on the tray and heads for the kitchen as fast as she can.
Why, congratulations, Hilly. I didn't know you were such a fan of Minnie's pies.
Celia's voice is shrill. She comes up from behind without Hilly noticing. As she trots toward Hilly, Celia stumbles over a chair leg. There are sideline giggles. Hilly stands very still, watching her approach. Celia, is this some kind of joke? Skeeta moves in closer, too. She's bored to death by this predictable evening, tired of seeing embarrassed faces of old friends too scared to come and speak to her. Celia's the only interesting thing to happen all night.
Hilly, Celia says, grasping Hilly's arm. I've been trying to talk to you all night. I think there's been some kind of miscommunication between us, and I just think if I explained...
What have you done? Let me go, Hilly says between gritted teeth.
She shakes her head, tries to walk off. But Celia clutches Hilly's long sleeve.
No, wait, hang on, you got to listen.
Hilly pulls away, but still, Celia doesn't let go. There's a moment of determination between them, Hilly trying to escape, Celia holding on, and then a ripping sound cuts through the air. Celia stares at the red material in her fingers. She's torn the auburn cuff clear off Hilly's arm. Hilly looks down, touches her exposed wrist.
What are you trying to do to me? She says in a low growl. Did that Negro maid put you up to this? Because whatever she told you and whatever you've blabbed to anyone else here?
Several more people have gathered around them, listening, all looking at Hilly with frowns of concern.
Blabbed? I don't know what you...
Hilly grabs Celia's arm.
Who did you tell?
She snarls.
Minnie told me. I know why you don't want to be friends with me.
Susie Purnell's voice over the microphone announcing the winners grows louder, forcing Celia to raise her own voice.
I know you think me and Johnny went behind your back,
she yells, and there is laughter from the front of the room over some comment and more applause. Just as Susie Purnell pauses over at the microphone to look at her notes, Celia yells,
But I got pregnant after you broke up.
The room echoes with the words. All is silent for a few long seconds. The women around them wrinkle their noses. Some start to laugh. Johnny's wife is D-R-U-N-K, someone says. Celia looks around her. She wipes at the sweat that's beading on her make-upped forehead.
I don't blame you for not liking me. Not if you thought Johnny cheated on you with me.
Johnny never would have.
And I'm sorry I said that. I thought you'd be tickled you won that pie.
Hilly bends over, snatches her pearl button from the floor. She leans closer to Celia so no one else can hear. You tell your Negro maid if she tells anybody about that pie, I will make her suffer. You think you're real cute signing me up for that auction, don't you? What, you think you can blackmail your way into the league?
What?
You tell me right this minute who else you've told about...
I didn't tell nobody nothing about a pie. I...
You liar, Hilly says, but she straightens quickly and smiles. There's Johnny. Johnny... I think your wife needs your attention.
Hilly flashes her eyes at the girls around them as if they're all in on a joke.
Celia, what's wrong? Johnny says.
Celia scowls at him, then scowls at Hilly.
She's not making sense. She called me a liar, and now she's accusing me of signing her name on that pie, and...
Celia stops, looks around like she recognizes no one around her. She has tears in her eyes. Then she groans and convulses. Vomit splatters onto the carpet.
Oh, shit, Johnny says, pulling her back.
Celia pushes Johnny's arm off her. She runs for the bathroom and he follows her. Hilly's hands are in fists. Her face is crimson, nearly the color of her dress. She marches over and grabs a waiter's arm.
Get that cleaned up before it starts to smell.
And then Hilly is surrounded by women, faces upturned, asking questions, arms out like they are trying to protect her.
I heard Celia's been battling with drinking, but this problem with lying now?
Hilly tells one of the Susies. It's a rumor she'd intended to spread about Minnie, in case the pie story ever got out.
What do they call that?
A compulsive liar.
That's it. A compulsive liar.
Hilly walks off with the women.
Celia trapped him into that marriage, telling him she was pregnant. I guess she was a compulsive liar even back then.
After Celia and Johnny leave, the party winds down quickly. Member wives look exhausted and tired of smiling. There is talk of the auction, of babysitters to get home to, but mostly of Celia Foote retching in the middle of it all. When the room is nearly empty, at midnight, Hilly stands at the podium. She flips through the sheets of silent bids. Her lips move as she calculates, but she keeps looking off, shaking her head. Then she looks back down and curses because she has to start all over again.
Hilly, I'm headed on back to your house.
Hilly looks up from her tallying. It is her mother, Mrs. Walters, looking even frailer than usual in her formal wear. She wears a floor-length gown, sky blue and beaded from 1943. A white orchid wilts at her clavicle. A colored woman in a white uniform is attached to her side.
Now, Mama, don't you get in that refrigerator tonight. I won't have you keeping me up all night with your indigestion. You go right to bed, you hear?
I can't even have some of Minnie's pie.
Hilly narrows her eyes at her mother.
That pie is in the garbage.
Well, why'd you throw it out? I want it just for you.
Hilly is still a moment, letting this sink in.
You? You signed me up?
I may not remember my name or what country I live in, but you and that pie is something I will never forget.
You old useless.
Hilly throws down the papers she's holding, scattering them everywhere. Mrs. Walters turns and hobbles toward the door, the colored nurse in tow.
Well, call the papers, Bessie, she says. My daughter's mad at me again.
Minnie, Chapter 26. On Saturday morning, I get up tired and sore. I walk in the kitchen where Sugar's counting out her $9.50, the money she earned at the benefit last night. The phone rings, and Sugar's on it quicker than a grease fire. Sugar's got a boyfriend, and she doesn't want her mama to know. Yes, sir, Sugar whispers and hands me the phone. Hello, I say. It's Johnny Foote, he says. I'm up at the deer camp, but I just... want you to know, C is real upset. She had a rough time at the party last night. Yes, sir, I know. You hurt then, huh? He sighs. Well, keep an eye on her next week, will you, Minnie? I'll be gone and... I don't know. Just call me if she doesn't perk up. I'll come home early if I need to. I look after. She gonna be all right. I didn't see myself what happened at the party, but I heard about it while I was doing dishes in the kitchen. All the servers were talking about it. You see that? Verena said to me. That big pink lady you work for, drunk as an engine on payday. I look up from my sink and saw Sugar headed straight for me with her hand up on her hip. Yeah, Mama. She upchuck all over the floor, and everybody at the whole party see. Then Sugar turned around laughing with the others. She didn't see the wop coming at her. Soap suds flew through the air. You shut your mouth, Sugar. I yank her to the corner. Don't you never let me hear you talking bad about the lady who put food in your mouth, clothes on your back. You hear me? Sugar, she nodded, and I went back to my dishes. But I heard her muttering, you do it all the time. I whipped around and put my finger in her face. I got a right to. I earn it every day working for that crazy fool. When I get to work on Monday, Miss C is still laid up in bed with her face buried under the sheets. Morning, Miss C. But she just rolls over and won't look at me. At lunchtime, I take a tray of ham sandwiches to the bed. I'm not hungry, she says and throws the pillow over her head. I stand there looking at her, all mummified in the sheets. What you gonna do, just lay there all day? I ask, even though I've seen her do it plenty of times before. But this is different. There's no goo on her skin or smile on her face. Please, just leave me alone. I start to tell her she needs to get up, put on her tacky clothes, and forget about it. But the way she's laying there so pitiful and poor, I keep quiet. I'm not her psychiatrist, and she's not paying me to be one. On Tuesday morning, Miss C is still in bed. Yesterday's lunch tray's on the floor without a single bite missing. She's still in that ratty blue nightgown that looks left over from her Tunica County days, the gingham ruffle torn at the neck. Something that looks like charcoal stains on the front. Come on, let me get to them sheets. Show about to come on, and Miss Judy gonna be in trouble. You ain't gonna believe what that fool done yesterday with Dr. Big Mouth. But she just lays there. Later on, I bring her a tray of chicken pot pie. Even though what I really want to do is tell Miss C to pull herself together and go in the kitchen and eat proper. Now, Miss Celia, I know it was terrible what happened at the benefit, but you can't sit in here forever feeling sorry for yourself. Miss Celia gets up and locks herself in the bathroom. I start stripping the bed. When I'm done, I pick up all the wet tissues and glasses off the nightstand. I see a stack of mail. At least the woman's gotten up to go to the mailbox. I pick it up to wipe the table, and there I see the letters HWH across the top of a card. Before I know it, I've read the whole note. Dear Celia, in lieu of reimbursing me for my dress you tore, we at the League would gladly receive a donation of no less than $200. Furthermore, please withhold from volunteering for any non-member activities in the future, as your name has been placed on a probationary list. Your cooperation in this matter is appreciated. Do kindly make the check out to the Jackson League chapter. Sincerely, Hilly Holbrook, President and Chairman of Appropriations. On Wednesday morning, Miss Celia's still under the covers. I do my work in the kitchen, try to appreciate the fact that she's not hanging around with me in here. But I can't enjoy it, because the phone's been ringing all morning, and for the first time since I started, Miss C won't pick it up. After the 10th time, I can't listen to it anymore, and finally just grab it and say hello. I go in the bedroom and tell her, Mr. Johnny on the phone. What? He's not supposed to know that I know that he knows about you. I let out a big sigh to show I don't give a fat rat about that lie anymore. He called me at home. The jig is up, Miss Celia. Miss Celia shuts her eyes. Tell him I'm asleep. I pick up the bedroom line and look Miss Celia hard in the eye and tell him she's in the shower. Yes, sir. She doing all right, I say, and narrow my eyes at her. I hang up the phone and glare down at Miss Celia. He want to know how you doing.
I heard.
I lied for you, you know. She puts the pillow back over her head. By the next afternoon, I can't stand it another minute. Miss Celia's still in the same spot she's been in all week. Her face is thin, and that butter batch is greasy looking. The room is starting to smell, too, like dirty people. I bet she hasn't bathed since Friday. Miss Celia, I say. Miss Celia looks at me, but doesn't smile, doesn't speak. Mr. Johnny gonna be home tonight, and I told him I'd look after you. What's he gonna think if he find you laid up in that old nasty night thing you got on? I hear Miss Celia sniffle, then hiccup, then start to cry full on. None of this would have happened if I just stayed where I belonged. He should have married proper. He should have married Hilly. Come on, Miss Celia. It ain't the way Hilly looked at me. Like I was nothing. Like I was trash on the side of the road. But Miss Hilly don't count. You can't judge yourself by the way that woman see you. I'm not right for this kind of life. I don't need a dinner table for 12 people to sit at. I couldn't get 12 people to come over if I begged. I shake my head at her, complaining again because she has too much. Why does she hate me so much? She doesn't even know me, Miss Celia cries. And it's not just Johnny. She called me a liar, accused me of getting her that pie. She bangs her fist against her knees. I never would have thrown up if it wasn't for that. What pie? Hilly won your pie. And she accused me of signing her up for it. Playing some trick on her. She wails and sobs. Why would I do that? Write her name down on a list. It comes to me real slow what's going on here. I don't know who signed up Hilly for that pie, but I sure know why she'd eat alive anybody she thought did it. I glance over at the door. That voice in my head says, walk away, Minnie. Just ease on out of here. But I look at Miss Celia, bawling into her old nightgown, and I get a guilt thick as Yazoo clay.
I can't do this to Johnny anymore. I've already decided, Minnie. I'm going back, she sobs. Back to Sugar Ditch.
You gonna leave your husband just cause you throwed up at some party? Hang on. I think my eyes opening wide. Miss Celia can't leave Mr. Johnny. Where in the heck would that leave me? Miss Celia cries down harder at the reminder. I sigh and watch her, wondering what to do. Lord, I reckon it's time. Time I told her the one thing in the world I never want to tell anybody. I'm going to lose my job either way, so I might as well take the chance. Missy, I say, and I sit down in the yellow armchair in the corner. I've never sat anywhere in this house but in the kitchen and her bathroom floor. But today calls for extreme measures. I know why Miss Hilly got so mad, I say. About the pie, I mean. Miss Celia blows a hard, loud honk into a tissue. She looks at me. I did something to her. It was terrible. Awful. My heart starts thumping just thinking about it. I realize I can't sit in this chair and tell her the story at the same time. I get up and walk to the end of the bed.
What?
She sniffs.
What happened, Minnie?
Miss Hilly. She called me up at home last year when I was still working for Miss Walters to tell me she's sending Miss Walters to the old lady home. I got scared. I got 5 kids to feed. Leroy was already working 2 shifts. I feel a burn rise up in my chest. Now, I know what I did wasn't Christian. But what kind of person sent her own mama to the home to take up with strangers? There's something about doing wrong to that woman that make it just seem right. Miss Celia sits up in bed, wipes her nose. She looks like she's paying attention now. For 3 weeks, I'd be looking for work. Every day after I get off from Miss Walters, I went looking. I go over to Miss Child's house. She passed me up. I go on to the Rawlis place. They don't want me neither. The Riches, the Patrick Smiths, the Walkers, not even those Catholic Thibodeau with them 7 kids. Nobody do. Oh, Minnie, says Miss Celia. That's awful. I clench my jaw. Ever since I was a little girl, my mama tell me not to go sass-mouthing. But I didn't listen, and I got knowed for my mouth round town. And I figured that's what it be. Why nobody want to hire me. When they was 2 days left at Miss Walters, and I still didn't have no new job, I started getting real scared. With Benny's asthma and sugar still in school, and Kendra, and we was tight on money already. And that's when Miss Hilly, she come over to Miss Walters to talk to me. She say, come work for me, Minnie. I'll pay you 25 cents more a day than Mama did. A dangling carrot, she called it, like I was some kind of plow mule. I feel my fist forming. Like I'd even consider beating my friend Yule May Crookle out of her job. Miss Hilly think everybody just as two-faced as she is. I wipe my hand across my face. I'm sweating. Miss C is listening with her mouth open, looking dazed. I tell her, no thank you, Miss Hilly. And so she say she paid me 50 cents more, and I say, no ma'am, no thank you. Then she break my back, Miss Celia. She tell me she know about the Childs and the Rawlis and all them others that turned me down. Said it was cause she'd made sure everybody knew I was a thief. I've never stole a thing in my life, but she told everybody I did, and wasn't nobody in town gonna hire a sass-mouthing, thieving nigger for a maid, and I might as well go ahead and work for her for free. And that's how come I did it. Miss Celia blinks at me. What, Minnie? I tell her, eat my shit. Miss Celia sits there, still looking dazed. Then I go home. I mix up that chocolate custard pie. I puts sugar in it and baker's chocolate and the real vanilla my cousin bring me from Mexico. I tote it over to Miss Walter's house, where I know Miss Hilly be sitting around waiting for the home to come and get her mama so she can sell that house, go through her silver, collect her due. Soon as I put that pie down on the countertop, Miss Hilly smiles, thinking it's a peace offering, like that's my way of showing her I'm real sorry about what I said. And then I watch her. I watch her eat it myself. 2 big pieces. She stuff it in her mouth like she ain't never eaten nothing so good. Then she say, I knew you'd change your mind, Minnie. I knew I'd get my way in the end. And she laughed, kind of prissy, like it was all real funny to her. That's when Miss Walters, she say she getting a mite hungry too and asked for a piece of that pie. I tell her, no ma'am, that one's special for Miss Hilly. Miss Hilly say, Mama can have some if she wants. Just a little piece, though. What you put in here, Minnie? That makes it taste so good. I say, that good vanilla from Mexico. And then I go ahead. I tell her what else I put in that pie for. Miss C is still as a stone staring at me, but I can't meet her eyes now. Miss Walters, her mouth fall open. Nobody in that kitchen said anything for so long, I could have made it out the door before they knew I was gone. But then Miss Walters started laughing. Laughed so hard she almost fall out of the chair. Say, well, Hilly, that's what you get, I guess. And I wouldn't go tattling on Minnie either, or you'll be known all over town as the lady who ate 2 slices of Minnie's shit. I sneak a look up at Miss Celia. She's staring wide-eyed, disgusted. I start to panic that I told her this. She'll never trust me again. I walk over to the yellow chair and sit myself down. Miss Hilly thought you knew the story, that you were making fun of her. She never would have pounced on you if I hadn't done what I did. Miss Celia just stares at me. But I want you to know, if you leave Mr. Johnny, Then Miss Hilly done won the whole ball game. Then she done beat me. She beat you. I shake my head, thinking about you and May in jail, and Miss Skeeter without any friends left. There ain't many people left in this town that she ain't beat. Miss C is quiet a while. Then she looks over at me and starts to say something, but she shuts her mouth back. Finally, she just says, "Thank you for telling me that." She lays back down, but before I close the door, I can see her eyes are wide smack open. The next morning, I find Miss C's finally managed to get herself out of bed, wash her hair, and put all that makeup on again. It's cold outside, so she's back in one of her tight sweaters. "Glad to have Mr. Johnny back home?" I ask. Not that I care, but what I do want to know is if she's still fiddling with that idea of leaving. But Miss Celia doesn't say much. There's a tiredness in her eyes. She's not so quick to smile at every little thing. She points her finger out the kitchen window. "I think I'll plant a row of rose bushes along the back of the property. When they gonna bloom? We should see something by next spring." I take this as a good sign that she's planning for the future. I figure somebody running off wouldn't go to the trouble to plant flowers that won't bloom until next year. For the rest of the day, Miss Celia works in the flower garden, tending to the mums. The next morning, I come in and find Miss Celia at the kitchen table. She's got the newspaper out, but she's staring out at the mimosa tree. It's rainy and chilly outside. "Morning, Miss Celia." "Hey, Minnie." Miss Celia just sits, looking out at that tree, fiddling with a pen in her hand. It started to rain. "What you want for lunch today? We got a roast beef or some of this chicken pie left over?" I lean in the refrigerator. I've got to make a decision about Leroy. Tell him how it is. Either you quit beating on me or I'm gone. And I'm not taking the kids either. Which ain't true about the kids. But that ought to scare him more than anything. "I don't want anything." Miss Celia stands up, slips off one red high heel, then the other. She stretches her back, still staring out the window at that tree. She cracks her knuckles, and then she walks out the back door. I see her on the other side of the glass, and then I see the axe. I get a little spooked because nobody likes to see a crazy lady with an axe in her hand. She swings it hard through the air like a bat, a practice chop. "Lady, you done lost it this time." The rain is pouring down all over Miss Seed, but she doesn't care. She starts chopping at that tree. Leaves are sprinkling down all over her, sticking in her hair. I set the platter of roast beef down on the kitchen table and watch, hoping this doesn't turn into something. She bunches her mouth up, wipes the rain from her eyes. Instead of getting tired, every chop comes a little harder. "Miss Celia, come on out the rain," I holler. "Let Mr. Johnny do that when he get home." But she's nothing doing. She made it halfway through that trunk, and the tree's starting to sway a little. Drunk as my daddy. Finally, I just plop down in the chair where Miss Celia was reading, waiting for her to finish the job. I shake my head and look down at the newspaper. That's when I see Miss Hilly's note tucked underneath it and Miss Celia's check for $200. I look a little closer. Along the bottom of the check, in the little space for the notes, Miss Celia's written the words in pretty cursive handwriting. "For two slice Hilly." I hear a groan and see the tree crash to the ground. Leaves and dead fronds fly through the air, sticking all over her butter batch.
Miss Skeeter, Chapter 27. I stare at the phone in the kitchen. No one's called here in so long, it's like a dead thing mounted to the wall. There's a terrible quiet looming everywhere. At the library, at the drugstore where I pick up Mother's medicine, on High Street where I buy typewriter ink, in our own house. President Kennedy's assassination, less than 2 weeks ago, has struck the world dumb. It's like no one wants to be the first to break the silence. Nothing seems important enough. On the rare occasion that the phone does ring lately, it's Dr. Neal, calling with more bad test results, or a relative checking on Mother. And yet, I still think Stuart, sometimes, even though it's been 5 months since he's called. Even though I finally broke down and told Mother we'd broken up. Mother looked shocked, as I suspected she would, but thankfully just sighed. I take a deep breath, dial 0, and close myself up in the pantry. I tell the local operator the long-distance number and wait.
Harper and Row Publishers, how may I connect you?
Elaine Stein's office, please. I wait for her secretary to come on the line, wishing I had done this earlier. But it felt wrong to call the week of Kennedy's death, and I heard on the news most offices were closed. Then it was Thanksgiving week, and when I called, the switchboard told me no one was answering in her office at all, so now I'm calling more than a week later than I'd planned.
Elaine Stein.
I blink, surprised it's not her secretary. Mrs. Stein, I'm sorry. This is Eugenia Phelan in Jackson, Mississippi.
Yes, Eugenia.
She sighs, evidently irritated that she took the chance to answer her own phone. I was calling to let you know that the manuscript will be ready right after the new year. I'll be mailing it to you the second week of January. I smile, having delivered my rehearsed lines perfectly. There is silence, except for an exhale of cigarette smoke. I shift on the flower can. I'm the one writing about the colored women in Mississippi?
Yes, I remember,
she says, but I can't tell if she really does. But then she says,
you're the one who applied for the senior position. How is that project going?
It's almost finished. We just have 2 more interviews to complete, and I was wondering if I should send it directly to your attention or to your secretary.
Oh, no. January is not acceptable.
Eugenia, are you in the house?
I hear Mother call. I cover the phone.
Just a minute, Mama.
I call back, knowing if I don't, she'll barge in here.
The last editor's meeting of the year is on December 21st,
Mrs. Stein continues.
If you want a chance at getting this read, I've got to have it in my hands by then. Otherwise, it goes in the pile. You don't want to be in the pile, Miss Phelan.
But you told me January. Today is December 2nd. That only gives me 19 days to finish the entire thing.
December 21st is when everyone leaves for vacation, and then in the new year we're deluged with projects from our own list of authors and journalists. If you're a nobody, as you are, Miss Phelan, before the 21st is your window. Your only window.
I swallow. I don't know if...
By the way, was that your mother you were speaking to? Do you still live at home?
I try to think of a lie. She's just visiting. She's sick. She's passing through. Because I do not want Mrs. Stein to know that I've done nothing with my life. But then I sigh. Yes, I still live at home.
And the Negro woman who raised you? I'm assuming she's still there?
No, she's gone.
Too bad. Do you know what happened to her? It just occurred to me you'll need a section about your own maid.
I close my eyes, fighting frustration. I don't know, honestly.
Well, find out, and definitely get that in. It'll add something personal to all this.
Yes, ma'am, I say, even though I have no idea how I'll finish 2 maids in time, much less write stories about Constantine. Just the thought of writing about her makes me wish, deeply, that she was here now.
Goodbye, Miss Phelan. I hope you make the deadline,
she says. But before she hangs up, she mutters,
And for God's sake, you're a 24-year-old educated woman. Go get an apartment.
I get off the phone, stunned by the news of the deadline and Mrs. Stein's insistence to get Constantine in the book. I know I need to get to work immediately, but I check on Mother in her bedroom. In the past 3 months, her ulcers have gotten much worse. She's lost more weight and can't get through 2 days without vomiting. Even Dr. Neal looked surprised when I brought her in for her appointment last week. Mother eyes me up and down from her bed.
Don't you have Bridge Club today?
It's canceled. Elizabeth's baby is colicky, I lie. So many lies have been told. The room is thick with them. How are you feeling? I ask. The old white enamel bowl is next to her on the bed. Have you been sick?
I'm fine. Don't wrinkle your forehead like that, Eugenia. It's not good for your complexion.
Mother still doesn't know that I've been kicked out of Bridge Club, or that Patsy Joyner got a new tennis partner. I don't get invited to cocktail parties or baby showers anymore, or any functions where Hilly will be there. Except the league. At meetings, girls are short, to the point with me, when discussing newsletter business. I try to convince myself I don't care. I fix myself at my typewriter and don't leave most days. I tell myself, that's what you get when you put 31 toilets on the most popular girl's front yard. People tend to treat you a little differently than before. It was almost 4 months ago that the door was sealed shut between Hilly and me. A door made of ice so thick it would take 100 Mississippi summers to melt it. It's not as if I hadn't expected consequences. I just hadn't thought they'd last so long. Hilly's voice over the phone was gravelly sounding, low, like she'd been yelling all morning.
You are sick, she hissed at me. Do not speak to me. Do not look at me. Do not say hello to my children.
Technically, it was a typo, Hilly, was all I could think to say.
I am going over to Senator Whitworth's house myself and telling him you, Skeeter Phelan, will be a blight on his campaign in Washington, a wart on the face of his reputation if Stuart ever associates with you again.
I cringed at the mention of his name, even though we'd been broken up for weeks by then. I could imagine him looking away, not caring what I did anymore.
You turned my yard into some kind of a sideshow, Hilly had said. Just how long have you been planning to humiliate my family?
What Hilly didn't understand was I hadn't planned it at all. When I started typing out her bathroom initiative for the newsletter, typing words like disease and protect yourself and you're welcome, it was like something cracked open inside of me, not unlike a watermelon, cool and soothing and sweet. I always thought insanity would be a dark, bitter feeling. But it is drenching and delicious if you really roll around in it. I'd paid Pascagoula's brothers $25 each to put those junkyard pots onto Hilly's lawn, and they were scared, but willing to do it. I remember how dark the night had been. I remember feeling lucky that some old building had been gutted, and there were so many toilets at the junkyard to choose from. Twice I've dreamed I was back there doing it again. I don't regret it, but I don't feel quite as lucky anymore.
And you call yourself a Christian,
were Hilly's final words to me. And I thought, God, when did I ever do that? This November, Stooley Whitworth won the senator's race for Washington, but William Holbrook lost the local election to take his state seat. I'm quite sure Hilly blames me for this, too. Not to mention all that work she'd put into setting me up with Stuart was for nothing. A few hours after talking to Mrs. Stein over the phone, I tiptoe back to check on Mother one last time. Daddy's already asleep beside her. Mother has a glass of milk on the table. She's propped up on her pillows, but her eyes are closed. She opens them as I'm peeking in. Can I get you anything, Mama?
I'm only resting because Dr. Neal told me to. Where are you going, Eugenia? It's nearly 7 o'clock.
I'll be back in a little while. I'm just going for a drive. I give her a kiss, hoping she doesn't ask any more questions. When I close the door, she's already fallen asleep. I drive fast through town. I dread telling Abilene about the new deadline. The old truck rattles and bangs in the potholes. It's in fast decline after another hard cotton season. My head practically hits the ceiling because someone's retied the seat springs too tight. I have to drive with the window down, my arm hanging out so the door won't rattle. The front window has a new smash-in at the shape of a sunset. I pull up to a light on State Street across from the paper company. When I look over, there's Elizabeth and May Mobley and Raleigh all crammed in the front seat of their white Corvair, headed home from supper somewhere, I guess. I freeze, not daring to look over again, afraid she'll see me and ask what I'm doing in the truck. I let them drive ahead, watching their taillights, fighting a hotness rising in my throat. It's been a long time since I've talked to Elizabeth. After the toilet incident, Elizabeth and I struggled to stay friends. We still talked on the phone occasionally, but she stopped saying more than a hello and a few empty sentences to me at league meetings because Hilly would see her. The last time I stopped by Elizabeth's house was a month ago. I can't believe how big May Mobley's gotten, I'd said. May Mobley had smiled shyly, hid behind her mother's leg. She was taller but still soft with baby fat. Growing like a weed, Elizabeth said, looking out the window, and I thought, what an odd thing to compare your child to. A weed. Elizabeth was still in her bathrobe, hair rollers in, already tiny again after the pregnancy. Her smile stayed tight. She kept looking at her watch, touching her curlers every few seconds. We stood around the kitchen. Want to go to the club for lunch? I asked. Abilene swung through the kitchen door then. In the dining room, I caught a glimpse of silver and Battenberg lace. I can't, and I hate to rush you out, but Mama's meeting me at the jewel tailor shop. She shot her eyes out the front window again. You know how Mama hates to wait. Her smile grew exponentially. Oh, I'm sorry, don't let me keep you. I patted her shoulder and headed for the door. And then it hit me. How could I be so dumb? It's Wednesday, 12 o'clock. My old bridge club. I backed the Cadillac down her drive, sorry that I'd embarrassed her so. When I turned, I saw her face stretched up to the window, watching me leave. And that's when I realized she wasn't embarrassed that she'd made me feel bad. Elizabeth Leifold was embarrassed to be seen with me. I park on Abilene Street, several houses down from hers, knowing we need to be even more cautious than ever. Even though Hilly would never come to this part of town, she is a threat to us all now, and I feel like her eyes are everywhere. I know the glee she would feel catching me doing this. I don't underestimate how far she would go to make sure I suffered the rest of my life. It's a crisp December night, and a fine rain is just starting to fall. Head down, I hurry along the street. My conversation this afternoon with Mrs. Stein is still racing through my head. I've been trying to prioritize everything left to do, but the hardest part is, I have to ask Abilene again about what happened to Constantine. I cannot do a just job on Constantine's story if I don't know what's happened to her. It defeats the point of the book to put in only part of the story. It wouldn't be telling the truth. I hurry into Abilene's kitchen. The look on my face must tell her something's wrong.
What is it? Somebody see you?
No, I say, pulling papers from my satchel. I talked to Mrs. Stein this morning. I tell her everything I know about the deadline, about the pile.
All right. So,
Abilene is counting days in her head, the same way I have been all afternoon.
So, we got 2.5 weeks instead of 6 weeks. Oh, law. That ain't enough time. We still got to finish writing the Luvenia section and smooth out Faye Bell and the mini section. It ain't right yet. Miss Skeeter, we ain't even got a title yet.
I put my head in my hands. I feel like I'm slipping underwater. That's not all, I say. She wants me to write about Constantine. She asked me what happened to her. Abilene sets her cup of tea down. I can't write it if I don't know what happened, Abilene. So if you can't tell me, I was wondering if there's someone else who will. Abilene shakes her head.
I reckon there is, she says. But I don't want nobody else telling you that story.
Then, will you? Abilene takes off her black glasses, rubs her eyes. She puts them back on and I expect to see a tired face. She's worked all day, and she'll be working even harder now to try to make the deadline. I fidget in my chair, waiting for her answer. But she doesn't look tired at all. She's sitting up straight and gives me a defiant nod.
I'll write it down. Give me a few days. I'll tell you everything that happened to Constantine.
I work for 15 hours straight on Luvenia's interview. On Thursday night, I go to the league meeting. I'm dying to get out of the house, antsy from nerves, jittery about the deadline. The Christmas tree is starting to smell too rich. The spiced orange is sickly decadent. Mother is always cold, and my parents' house feels like I'm soaking in a vat of hot butter. I pause on the league steps, take in a deep breath of clean winter air. It's pathetic, but I'm glad to still have the newsletter. Once a week, I actually feel like I'm a part of things. And who knows? Maybe this time will be different, with the holidays starting and all. But the minute I walk in, backs turn. My exclusion is tangible, as if concrete walls have formed around me. Hilly gives me a smirk, whips her head around to speak to someone else. I go deeper into the crowd and see Elizabeth. She smiles and I wave. I want to talk to her about Mother, tell her I'm getting worried. But before I get too close, Elizabeth turns, head down, and walks away. I go to my seat. This is new, from her, here. Instead of my usual seat up front, I slip in the back row, angry that Elizabeth wouldn't even say hello. Beside me is Rachel Cole Brandt. Rachel hardly ever comes to meetings, with 3 kids working on her master's in English from Millsaps College. I wish we were better friends, but I know she's too busy. On my other side is damn Leslie Fullerbean and her cloud of hairspray. She must risk her life every time she lights a cigarette. I wonder, if I push the top of her head, would aerosol spray out of her mouth? Almost every girl in the room has her legs crossed, a lit cigarette in her hand. The smoke gathers and curls around the ceiling. I haven't smoked in 2 months, and the smell makes me feel ill. Hilly steps up to the podium and announces the upcoming gimme drives. Coat drive, can drive, book drive and a plain old money drive. And then we get to Hilly's favorite part of the meeting, the trouble list. This is where she gets to call out the names of anyone late on their dues or tardy for meetings or not fulfilling their philanthropic duties. I'm always on the trouble list nowadays for something. Hilly's wearing a red wool A-line dress with a cape coat over it, Sherlock Holmes style, even though it's hot as fire in here. Every once in a while, she tosses back the front flap like it's in her way, but she looks like she enjoys this gesture too much for it really to be a problem. Her helper, Mary Nell, stands next to her, handing her notes. Mary Nell has the look of a blonde lapdog, the Pekingese kind with tiny feet and a nose that perks on the end. "Now, we have something very exciting to discuss." Hilly accepts the notes from the lapdog and scans over them. "The committee has decided that our newsletter could use a little updating." I sit up straighter. Shouldn't I decide on changes to the newsletter? "First of all, we're changing the newsletter from a weekly to a monthly. It's just too much with stamps going up to 6 cents and all. And we're adding a fashion column, highlighting some of the best outfits worn by our members, and a makeup column with all the latest trends. Oh, and the trouble list, of course. That'll be in there, too." She nods her head, making eye contact with a few members. "And finally, the most exciting change. We've decided to name this new correspondence The Tattler, after the European magazine all the ladies over there read." "Isn't that the cutest name?" says Mary Lou White, and Hilly's so proud of herself she doesn't even bang the gavel at her for speaking out of turn. "Okay, then, it is time to choose an editor for our new modern monthly. Any nominations?" Several hands pop up. I sit very still. "Jeannie Price, what say ye?"
"I say Hilly. I nominate Hilly Holbrook."
"Aren't you the sweetest thing? All right, any others?" Rachel Cole Brandt turns and looks at me like, "Are you believing this?" Evidently, she's the only one in the room who doesn't know about me and Hilly. "Any seconds to..." Hilly looks down at the podium, like she can't quite remember who's been nominated. "To Hilly Holbrook as editor?"
"I second."
"I third." Bang, bang goes the gavel, and I've lost my post as editor. Leslie Fullerbean is staring at me with eyes so wide, I can see there isn't anything back there where her brain should be. "Skeeter, isn't that your job?" Rachel says. "It was my job," I mutter, and head straight for the doors when the meeting is over. No one speaks to me. No one looks me in the eye. I keep my head high. In the foyer, Hilly and Elizabeth talk. Hilly tucks her dark hair behind her ears, gives me a diplomatic smile. She strides off to chat with someone else, but Elizabeth stays where she is. She touches my arm as I walk out. "Hey, Elizabeth," I murmur.
"I'm sorry, Skeeter,"
she whispers and our eyes hang together. But then she looks away. I walk down the steps and into the dark parking lot. I thought she had something more to say to me, but I guess I was wrong. I don't go straight home after the league meeting. I roll all the Cadillac windows down and let the night air blow on my face. It is warm and cold at the same time. I know I need to go home and work on the stories, but I turn onto the wide lanes of State Street and just drive. I've never felt so empty in my life. I can't help but think of all that's piling on top of me. I will never make this deadline. My friends despise me. Stuart is gone. Mother's... I don't know what mother is, but we all know it's more than just stomach ulcers. The Sun and Sand bar is closed, and I go by slow, stare at how dead a neon sign seems when it's turned off. I coast past the tall Lamar Life Building, through the yellow blinking streetlights. It's only 8 o'clock at night, but everyone has gone to bed. Everyone's asleep in this town, in every way possible. I wish I could just leave here, I say, and my voice sounds eerie, with no one to hear it. In the dark, I get a glimpse of myself from way above, like in a movie. I've become one of those people who prowl around at night in their cars. God, I am the town's Boo Radley, just like in To Kill a Mockingbird. I flick on the radio, desperate for noise to fill my ears. It's My Party is playing, and I search for something else. I'm starting to hate the whiny teenage songs about love and nothing. In a moment of aligned wavelengths, I pick up Memphis WKPO, and out comes a man's voice, drunk sounding, singing fast and bluesy. At a dead-end street, I ease into the tote-some store parking lot and listen to the song. It is better than anything I've ever heard. You'll sink like a stone for the time.